John, can I read you a tweet that someone tweeted a couple of weeks ago, which made me laugh?
Yeah, go on.
And it's from another creative, and it says, it's okay for creatives to start drinking extra early when the alcohol is made by another creative, right? Question mark. And it's a bottle of your wine.
Who said that? Is that one of John's tweets?
It's from another creative who actually works at Havas. His name's Elliot Harris. And when I read the words, and there's obviously a picture attached to it, and when I clicked on the picture, it's a bottle of your white wine.
Brilliant. There's a very good friend of mine, Stephen Bailey, who's a journalist and writer, and I saw he was in, so he had an office in Soho, and he was sitting down outside, and he was having a drink, having lunch, and he said, John, join me for a drink for lunch. And I said, actually, funny enough, Stephen, I never drink at lunchtime. And he said, no, come on, John. And he then went on to say, there is no example, this is Stephen, says Stephen Bailey, yep. There is no example of a great creative person who wasn't in some way imbibing some form of alcohol, drugs, or whatever. He said, there is no example of a teetotal genius.
Is that true?
Well, here's what he said, and I kind of thought about it. It was very funny, actually. This is I'm sending out, the other thing I'm doing, by the way, I'm starting a wine club, in the sense of I'm going to send out a newsletter 4 times a year. It's going to be called Club Chamons, Chamans. That's the name of the vineyard. And it's just going to be stories from the vineyard and stories about wine. So if any of your listeners who want to join this club, please drop me a line. I'll include them and we'll have great fun. You know, the great thing you learn in advertising is you learn the power of fact. You know, did you know that? Because you can build an idea around that. You know, investigating this thing and the whole thing with wine, that actually Leonardo da Vinci was paid. He never got paid money for painting The Last Supper. He got paid with a vineyard. I always say he's probably the only man in the world who made money out of a vineyard. But he got paid with a vineyard. And I think there's a wonderful irony in that, isn't it? That he painted The Last Supper and he got a vineyard for painting it. There's something about that I quite like. But I like those funny facts about wine.
So we need a recommendation for you. So obviously everyone's stuck at home. They've gone through their Netflix list.
Yeah.
So could you recommend something that people would watch that could be TV or film that they may not have considered?
Well, you know, one of the things that I like doing is I like going back on. It's a great time to get, you know, people often say you should read those novels that you read a long time ago and, you know, read them again. I love doing that with movies, and I love going back and watching old movies. And we recently watched The Godfather again, and it was just so good. So good. And you know, you sort of sometimes forget how good it is. So I would recommend people to go back and watch some of the old great classic movies. I mean, there's some of them are just utterly brilliant.
When my kids have been 15, we've watched The Godfather with them as a whole bunch of films I've made them watch.
Yeah.
And two boys at 15 at the end of seeing one and two, which is probably nearly 6 hours, is it, or 5 hours?
Yeah, something like that.
Like all excited. What do you think? I went, yeah, it's all right. Yeah, it's all right. It's like, well, it's no Spider-Man, but it was okay.
Maybe, you know, David, it's that lovely thing they say. You know, it's that lovely quote about a son who at age 14 thought his father was unbelievably stupid. Yeah. And by the time he got to 18, he was amazed at how much his father had learned. Maybe it was just a bit too soon for them.
Yeah, I think it probably was. I think they'll come round.
Yeah, I mean,
they're like admitting that you've got a reference that they don't. Yeah.
There was no car chase in it. That's the problem.
Exactly. Yeah, it was a bit slow.
Car chase.
That's what I do know. So I look at a lot of these old films as well, and I notice that how the pace is so different, which I like.
Yeah.
So, the camera lingers. It doesn't quickly.
Yeah.
Jot all over the place.
But I've loved that. I love going back and watching some of those. And there's some brilliant, brilliant performances. And I think that's the thing that you can do.
I watched Being There the other day, which was absolutely...
Oh, wasn't it great? Yeah. Funny enough, actually, there was a documentary on Peter Sellers recently. I think there was something about...
Friday, I think. I watched that too.
Was it Friday? What was his wife's name at the time?
Yeah, I didn't realise she was so evil. Lynn Frederick.
Oh, no, it wasn't her. She was done by his... Swedish wife, what was her name?
Oh, Britt
Ekland, that's it, Britt Ekland. God, what has she done to her face?
Oh, yeah, that was the saddest thing. I kept looking at her thinking, God,
what have you done?
I know she's older, but...
He was a total genius in many ways and an evil man in lots of ways. And I remember seeing a documentary on him some 15 years ago, and Peter Hall had the greatest line ever. And he said that the trouble with Peter Sellers is he just didn't have the talent to handle his talent. And I thought, how many people have I met like that, hugely talented, but just didn't have the talent to handle it? And he was a fantastic example of that. And being there, I think being there is just utterly brilliant. And he then went on to make Fu Man, the Fu Manchu movie, which was an absolute disaster. He had no ability to select. He didn't understand that. He needed a good manager, but he never had one. But very, very, it was very sad, I thought, because enormous talent, but enormous talent just not able to cope with it. There was another lovely line, actually, in that documentary made years ago, and he was, as we all know, he was a great friend of Spike Milligan. Peter Sellers, they both used to make home movies. I think Spike Milligan could only afford 8mm movies, and Peter Sellers used to make 16mm. And Milligan said, so he was 8mm better than me at making movies. It was great. Brilliant.
So I've got a question on a particular thing. I don't know whether you've seen this, but if you haven't, it's great. The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan documentary that's just out on Netflix. Have you seen any of those, John?
I haven't actually. Is it good?
It sounds ridiculous. It's not so much just the basketball, but the mentality of a winner, really, is kind of, I would say, what it was about. It's just incredible. So we had a question on that, which we'll obviously not ask.
Actually, I have to say, one of the things I've loved is going back and, you know, we realise that documentaries have become kind of major, major players if I can use the word entertainment world, whereas before they were just instructional. And there have been a number of them. Burns' series on the Vietnam War.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Just absolutely fantastic. And I think if you get a chance to see that, it's just so great. And there's the guy who's the Middle Eastern correspondent for the BBC on the Middle East, who's, I can see him now, and he's done a series of podcasts on the history of the Middle East. And he's still the BBC correspondent. You'll see him occasionally. And if you get a, sorry, I'm being very vague here, but that's if okay. You get a chance, do go to the BBC and listen to those. And do you know what's alarming about is how similar the mistakes were made in the Middle East that were made in Vietnam. There's almost like a repeat of things, so we never learn. But it's a brilliant documentary series. He does them in 15-minute slots, so you can just do 15 minutes and go.
Do you know what it's called, John, or is it just on the site?
It'll be just, he's the Middle Eastern correspondent. I can see his name. I can see him now.
Is it Jeremy Bowen?
Jeremy Bowen.
That's Jeremy Bowen.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's him. Got it.
I'm obviously sitting next to a computer, cheating.
Sitting in front of him.
Yeah. So where are you based? Are you in London or in France?
I'm in London, yeah. We're based in London. I live in Clerkenwell, which I absolutely adore. But we're here. I almost was going to be in France, but I'm glad, actually, I'm back here. Somehow, I think I prefer to be here under these circumstances.
So this is a question we're asking everyone, particularly for people who live in trendy places like Clerkenwell. Have you attempted baking sourdough in this period of isolation?
Do you know, funny enough, I have.
And
I began to make a starter.
Yeah.
And failed hopelessly.
It's tough, isn't it?
It never did what it was supposed to do. It just stunk like nothing. I tried about three times and gave up and thought, fuck it. we've got this wonderful bakery over in Hackney called the Dusty Knuckle. If anybody's listening to this and you're living in that area, you should get your bread from the Dusty Knuckle. It's just off, not far from the Hackney Empire, over that way. And it was set up by a group of people. I think Jamie Oliver was involved in setting it up. And basically it takes people from troubled backgrounds and teaches them how to bake bread. And why it's called the Dusty Knuckle.
Yeah, brilliant.
And the bread is absolutely fantastic. And that they deliver. So now you can go online, they'll deliver to you. If you live most parts of central London and North London, they'll deliver. Oh, it's just brilliant.
Amazing. Parv, do you have a question?
John, are you wearing a mask when you go out?
I'm not. But I certainly, if I go on public transport, I will be wearing a mask. I mean, what we're going through is just unprecedented. And I get sort of slightly angry. Sorry, I'm going to be slightly angry now because I suppose I'm allowed to be. You know, I came back, we go to New Zealand because Philippa, my wife, is a Kiwi, and we go there every year. We go for basically February. I've always described February in the UK as a bit like, you know, Tuesday, except there are 28 of them in the row and the weather's really bad. So you want to go away. So rather than wishing it away, which people do about February, go away. So we go, obviously, the Southern Hemisphere, the weather's wonderful. And, you know, we were reading about all this stuff going on. And this is a bit of a long story, but when we fly back through Singapore, and there's a six-hour layover at Singapore, just the way the flights work. So you have to wait six hours at the Singapore airport. So we normally just go into Singapore because it's very close, 20 minutes away, and have a meal and stuff like that, come back, get on the flight and go home. And we thought, oh, God, should we be doing that with the whole thing that's happening and blah, blah, blah. And so we called up, you know, the hotel that we normally go to and have a meal and stuff like that. And we said, look, what's the situation? And they said, well, you know, we're temperature testing everybody as they come into. We won't let anybody into the hotel unless they're temperature tested, and we wash down all the time. We think you're relatively safe, but it's up to you. Anyway, long story short, we did. We went there. We did it, and it was fine. Came back, got on the flight, came back to London. And by the way, when you get off the plane at Singapore to come out, heat cameras checking people as they came through. Came back to London. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I could have had the fucking bubonic plague and I walked straight in. Nothing. Except an announcement on the airplane. If you're not feeling well, please go and see a doctor or self-isolate. Well, of course, you know, what does that mean? And I think that I look at the incompetence of the people now in government, and I just think it's almost criminal. Yeah. You know, I look at people in care homes who are seeing their loved ones die and can't go and hold their hand because of what's happened. They can't connect with them. And I just think, how can we have a government that's allowed this to happen and lied to us, lied all the way through, lied. And I just think, you know, we're in a terrible state. And I do give a talk at the moment, and I talk about creativity and the power of truth. And in this world we live in today, where somehow the truth is a disposable commodity, we've really got to learn how to respect the truth, how to go back to it, and how to understand the value of it. And actually, creativity without truth has no power, has absolutely no power. And in our own work, talking the truth, like we say, you know, in advertising, great ads, the great campaigns were the ones that told the truth.
Yeah.
That was one of the great insights that Birnbach made. He said, tell the truth, but make it interesting. He was so right in that. And that's one of the great lessons I learned. But you increasingly look at a world where, as I say, truth is a disposable commodity. And we're suffering enormously because of it.
At the moment, people are not brave enough to tell the truth in comms anymore.
There's always been a sort of, we have a sort of strange relationship with the truth, don't we? We find it sometimes difficult to tell. You know, when you're confronted with something where you have to tell a truth, it can be awkward, but yet we admire it when we see it. You know, when we see somebody who tells the truth, we admire them. When we see a company that tells you the truth, we admire them. If we could come across a politician that told the truth, we would genuinely admire them. We admire the truth. It's one of those factors that we look up to. We often find it difficult ourselves. So not doing that, not trying to adopt, finding a way of adopting it and bringing it central to what you do and your work is going to hamper your ability to create great work. So this sense of truth, I think, is something that we have lost. And as I say, in art, so often you hear an artist or a painter or a filmmaker or a writer, and they say to you, this is what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
You know, this is what I, and that's what you're always doing in all your work. What did you want to say? So do you want to tell a lie or do you want to tell the truth? You know, I mean, I don't know how many people are watching Normal People. I got into it late, but whatever you think about it, whatever, you know, it's fairly frank in the way it portrays it, but it's trying to get to a truth. And I think that's what holds it together and makes it more profound than just, you know, the angst of growing up and the angst of kind of, you know, early sexual encounters and all of those things. I think it's trying to find the truth. And I think that's what great work does. And I think we look around us, we don't need to talk about America right now, but we look around us and we seem to have lost that commodity, that value of this is fundamentally important. You know, I remember, you know, a woman being interviewed just before the election here when it was Boris Johnson or Jeremy Corbyn, both of whom I think were fairly appalling. And the woman said, and she was very smart, and she said, well, I think I will vote for Boris Johnson. I know he's a liar, but I'll vote for him. And you kind of thought, is this where we've got to? Is this how, you know, what hope is there for us if that's what we've got? You know, somebody quite intelligent saying, I know this man's a liar, but I'll vote for him.
Yes.
It's terrifying, isn't it? But anyway, end of the lecture. let's talk about sex and drugs and rock and roll.
Very good. Well, let's get on. Let's tee up Parvs. I'm going to blame you, Parvs. But we've asked everyone else. Let's ask the loo roll question.
So, John, we're going to have to ask you, and hopefully you'll answer it for us. Can you tell us how many loo rolls you've got?
We're doing a table.
I think we've got four.
Well, you're literally right at the in relegation.
Yeah. Oh, am I? We've got two bathrooms. We've got two toilets here, and I think we've got about four. I never understand this paranoia about toilet paper. I mean, you know, I'm much more worried if I ran out of wine or pasta or bread or something.
If you wanted to be top of the table, you'd have to be over 90. So some of the people who have had 90 in
stock.
Where'd
you put them all? Would you have an annex?
One of them put them in his garage, but yeah. So,
yeah. What are they going to deal them or something?
Stressed about that.
Oh dear.
Do you think you've learned anything about yourself in this period of lockdown? Is there any, you know, for example, several people we've spoke to have said, I didn't realise I missed people so much, or that I could work at home, or...
Yeah, I've learned is I'm quite comfortable in my own skin. I always remember, actually, I took a sabbatical in 2008, and people said, oh, John, he's not going to last, you know, it was a three-month sabbatical. And I did, actually, and when I got back, people said, so, John, how was it? How was the sabbatical? I said, you know, it was wonderful. I said, the concept of doing nothing has been severely undersold. And I did find that I was able to kind of enjoy, well, I'm obviously here with my wife, Philippa, but I'm able to enjoy my own company. And the thing that I loved about that, and I've done it here, was I remember the first Monday. So we spent it down at the vineyard. We got there, and it was the weekend, and it was Monday morning, and it was about 9:15, and I turned around to Philippa, and I said, you know, I'm going to go upstairs into our salon area, and I'm going to sit down and read a book. And it was just wonderful at 9:15 on a Monday, sitting down in the morning, reading a book, something I'd never really done before. You know, you're on holiday, you might do that. And it was wonderful. And I can even remember the book, which was a great book. But so that sense of being able to be on your own, I've enjoyed. But the thing that I do miss, because I'm also a very social animal, I miss the company of my friends and, you know, not being able to hug my kids and grandchildren and stuff like that. And that's weird. But I do know that I'm able to be on my own.
So we've got two more questions. Football question.
Football?
Yeah.
Go on.
Are you a football guy, John? Are you an Arsenal fan?
No. Well, funny enough, you should say that. I'm not really a football fan, and I'll tell you why. I used to go to Arsenal when I was about 18 or 19.
Yeah.
I used to go to the Arsenal. And I remember standing in the stands, as you do, obviously, and it was like a November. It was wet. It was cold. And, you know, there was 40,000 kind of screaming lunatics where a fight was about to break out at any moment. And I suddenly thought to myself, why am I standing here with 40,000 blokes screaming their heads off? And, you know, when I could be walking down the King's Road looking at girls wearing very, very short skirts. And I thought, you know, that's it. I'm going to now go to the King's Road. That was the last time I went to the Arsenal. Well, I had been since, actually. My son-in-law is a season ticket holder, and I've been with him. But it's changed enormously. So I'm not really a great football fan.
So, John, the question was going to be, and you probably answered it, if you had a choice to either restart the Premier League or open pubs, which one would it be?
Oh, I'd definitely open pubs. Definitely.
So one last question, John. Have you seen any, or can you remember any, either good or bad ads that you've seen?
I haven't really seen, and I don't really like talking about bad things. The thing that I've loved about this is the little short videos that all kinds of people have made, which I think has kind of, and they're very funny. They're sort of little 60-second, 30-second clips. And I thought the creative industry could learn a lot from looking at these and sort of going, wow, that could make a great commercial. That could make it. And that's the humour has been quite left field, quite, you know, wonderful. You know, they've been going around. I'm sure you've seen them all. And they've just been hilarious. And I think that's been a real inspiration. And if I was, which I'm not, absolutely in the heart of the industry, I'd be looking at those and going, that for me is where I think advertising could go. Make people smile, make them laugh, give them a good time.
John, have you come across something called TikTok?
Yes, indeed.
So that's the sort of thing that you're referring to, because they are amazing videos.
Amazing. And I think it's just brilliant. Now, I know that, you know, there are millions of these things being posted and we're only seeing 0.001% of those that are good. But they are just truly wonderful. Some of them I thought, well, I wish I'd thought of that. I wish that was on my portfolio or in my portfolio. That's brilliant.
Excellent. We can put you out of your misery, John. We're done. That was great. That was fantastic. Really appreciate your time.
Lovely talking to you both and absolutely great. Enjoy the wine and make sure you only drink good stuff. Like it is, only read good stuff. It rubs off. Great stuff. Great talking to you both.
Have a good day.
Thank you.
Yeah, you have a great one. Bye.